Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ni'ila Daf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins six lines from the top of Daf Yud Tes, Omar Mar. We'll be quoting from the Tanaic source that we saw on Daf Yud Ches Omed Aleph. We had opened up the Tanaic source back on Daf Yud Ches with a pasuk from the topic dealing with Mi'ila, Nefesh Ki Simol Mal V'Chota Bishgoga, Perek Hey of Vayikra, pasuk Tezvav. And the Braisa had mentioned that the word Nefesh comes to include not only a private individual as a potential violator of Mi'ila, but a king, a Nasi, and Moshiach, the anointed Kohen Gadol, the high priest. Here we quote from that source. Omar Mar, Nefesh, Echod HaYochid, V'Echod HaNasi, V'Echod HaMoshiach B'Mashma. They are all included in what is conveyed by the meaning of the word Nefesh. The word nefesh, literally a soul, an individual. So the Gemara here asks, why does the Torah and this Tanaic source have to go out of its way to tell me that each one of these people could be a potential violator of Mi'ila? Would you have thought otherwise? Sheyachol mai. That's the Gemara's question of what is the Havamina, what would one have thought otherwise? Pshita, nefesh ksiv. The pasuk says nefesh, and obviously that includes all of these people, the Nasi and the Moshiach. The Gemara answers, why was it necessary to spell these things out, these individuals out? Mal detemo, one might have thought, Omar Rachmana, the pasuk says, Vasher yitain mimenu al zar. One who takes the sanctified oil and puts it on a zar, someone who is not fit to have it placed on him. V'hai lav zar hu, a Kohen Gadol who is appointed to that position through an anointing. So he's not considered a zar, literally a stranger to it. Da imshach begavei, he has been anointed through it. So therefore, let us say a Kohen Gadol would use the Shemen HaMishcha, the holy anointing oil, for his own purposes. Maybe he's not to be considered a Zar, and he wouldn't be considered in violation of Mi'ila. Kamash Malon, therefore it was necessary for the Tanaic source to spell out that Nefesh Kisimol, the posuk that says that a Nefesh who violates Mi'ila includes the Kohen Gadol as well. In other words, any personal use of something sanctified, you are considered guilty of Mi'ila, even though you might have thought that he's not a stranger to it. At this point, the Gemara makes an allusion to that which we learned in our previous shiur. Akshay, the word akshay means compared, hekesh. Akshay Rachmona, the Torah compared Mi'ila L'Soita, U'Lavodes Kechavim, U'Latruma. These three points, the comparison of Mi'ila to Sota, to the suspect married woman, suspect of immorality, to idolatry, and to Truma, were featured on Daf Yud Ches. We have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Yud Ches Amar Aleph. If you go back to Yud Ches Amar Aleph, second line from the bottom, you'll notice an arrow to the immediate left-hand side of Gemara text with a Yud Tes Amar Aleph reference. showing where this is, where the connection takes place. So there was a reference comparing Me'ilah to these topics. In the context of Sota, we want to know what's the point of the comparison. L'Sota, the triangles, and as we referred to in our previous shir on Daf Yud Ches, here we'll repeat that point by looking at the Nosei Mivneh heading in the outside margin where you see a triangle featured. Sota, V'Dezor, and Shuma are words that you see in triangles. L'Eil Sof Yud Ches Aman Aleph Muzkar De'Me'ilah Hukish L'Nosim Elu. Before on Daf Yud Ches Aman Aleph, the Gemara mentioned that Me'ilah is compared to these topics. Where do we see a manifestation, a practical manifestation of these comparisons? It might be pointed out that there, the source already had mentioned that that we cited the Sota case for the purpose of showing that the word Me'ilah has to do with a change, and we did the same thing with regard to Avodah Zarah, but here the Gemara feels that the comparison goes further, more than just a function of a word definition. So here the Gemara explains, L'Sota, we learn from the comparison between Me'ilah and Sota, that the Afal Gav, the Lo Pogam, even though there is no actual depreciation. Now, what does that mean? The case of the Sota involves a woman who is already an already married woman who is suspect of having been with another man. In other words, after she's already married, that she is suspect of conducting immorality with a with another man. Being that she is not a basula, an unmarried virgin woman, but rather she's already married, she's considered a person that's already peguma. She's experienced pegam. And as such, we see that there is a sota violation, even though you're dealing with something, with a situation that there's already been pegam. So, how about in the case of hektish? In other words, let's go over this point again. The Sota section of the Torah is describing a violation that does not involve the addition of depreciation, of added depreciation. The depreciation is already there, and yet there is a Sota violation. It's considered a parsha, a section of the Torah dealing with a wrongful act. So you have the Sota represents a wrongful act without depreciation. Gabi Hekdish Nami, this dashed underline emphasizes this expression, the point of comparison to Me'ilah. So with regard to Hekdish, which is the issue of sanctified things misused for yourself, for your personal benefit, Nosna Tabas Biyada Mo'ala, the mere slipping on of the ring and benefiting the Hanoh, even though by wearing a golden ring there is no actual depreciation, but it nevertheless is considered a violation. Just like we said by Sota, that there was no act of depreciation, and yet there was a violation. So that's what we gain from Sota, that in order to be considered a violator of Me'ilah, there doesn't necessarily have to be depreciation. According to the Mishnah, that is true if you're dealing with an item that doesn't have depreciation built into it. And when is Me'ilah violated? At the point that you have a Shava Pruta's worth of benefit. A Pruta is a minimum amount of value of benefit. Continuing in the comparisons. Ki Aksha Rachman Alavadis Gechavim, the comparison between Me'ilah and idolatry. Da'ad De'is Bo Shinui. Just like we said by idolatry, idolatry is an act of change. you are dealing with a Jew who is a servant of the Almighty, and he changes his ways to serve an idol. Gabi Hekdish Nami, by hektish as well. Ad de bika bekardom. The mi'ila, the kardom is an axe, so there is no mi'ila violation until he actually uses the axe for chopping. Rashi, on the second line underneath the Gemara text, in dealing with this point, says as follows, and we'll read the Rashi where you see a dashed underline. Shemeshana atzmo mishchina levadiskhovim. The shinui, the change that is apparent by idolatry, is where one changes himself from the shchina, from the divine presence, from the Almighty, to idolatry. Gabi hektish nami, the parallel to hektish, to our topic of sanctified items and mi'ilah. Ad debika bekardom atzichulin. He is not considered in violation of mi'ilah until he uses the axe for chopping non-sanctified wood, common wood. The shina, this is the key point that he changes, mimaleches ha-kodesh, mimaleches kodesh from maleches choil, that he changes from holy activity to mundane activity. Lo mo'al, ad debika, he is not considered in violation of mi'ilah until he chops with it the pogma, that he thereby causes depreciation. It would seem from Rashi that if, let us say, a person took an axe that had been sanctified and used it as a bookend, namely causing depreciation in the axe, no use of the axe, and inherent or concurrent depreciation, he would not be in violation. Continuing in the Gemara, Aksha Rachmona Latruma, Ma Truma, the comparison between Me'ilah and Truma, Ma Truma ki Yochal, the Pasuk speaks about the eating of Truma as for a non-Kohen eating the Truma, he isn't considered in violation. Prat Lamazik, the use of the word Yochal in the Torah, eating, is to the exclusion of someone who just damages it. Gabi Hektish Nami, Kol Debar Achila, any food item that had been sanctified. Ki mazik le, if he doesn't eat it but merely ruins it, destroys it, potter. Rashi explains that this goes beyond food items. We have dashed underlined this in the Rashi about 7-8 lines under the Gemara text, where Rashi says, Duha din nami af midi delav bar achilahu, even if you're dealing with a non-food item, ki mazik le potter, the mere destruction of it does not cause a me'ilah violation. The ein chiyuv mila chiyene, me'ilah is not considered violated unless he benefits. So we learn from Truma, just like a Truma violation is whereby a person will be chayav, let us say, to pay the principal and a fifth, and he'll be chayav misa b'dei shemayim if he ate it willingly, as opposed to someone who simply trampled on some truma produce, destroying it, he wouldn't be chayav misa for that, nor would he be chayav to add a fifth to the principal, because that those violations are binding only when he eats the truma. Similarly, by the hektish, the me'ilah violation doesn't take place if he merely destroys the sanctified item. We had learned that a dovar she'ein bo pagam, and something that doesn't have pagam to it, and then there is no the me'ilah violation takes place when one receives a shava pruta's worth of benefit. We had seen an example of this. Ketzad nosna katla, a woman put on a golden necklace, and it was shosa b'kosh shel zav, or someone drank from a golden cup. So it seems from the example of the Mishnah that something made of gold, like this golden cup, is described as something that doesn't have depreciation. This gives rise to the Gemara's upcoming discussion. Before we learn the Gemara itself, we glance at the outside margin under the Nosei heading. Birur, we want to clarify, Halde Mashma Meha Mishnah dissolve Havidover Shein Bo Pagam. From the Mishnah, we get the feeling, we get the impression that gold is something that doesn't have depreciation. Le'or ha'uvda de'royim de'shezov im hazman nechsar. We find that gold in the passage of time does depreciate. So how do we resolve the Mishnah which implied otherwise? The Gemara. Omar lei Rav Kana l'Rav Zvid. Rav Kana asks Rav Zvid, V'davo, dava is gold. V'davo, lav bar if gumihu. Is gold something that doesn't have depreciation? V'ho, davo, dekalse, denun, lehecho azal. The gold of Kalse is the daughter-in-law's of the daughter-in-law of Nun. Nun was the name of a man. It's his name. His name was Nun. And he was a wealthy man, and apparently he gave his daughter-in-law golden jewelry. And in the course of time, it seems to have diminished. So from that story, you see that there is a diminishing, a depreciation of gold. Omalei, so Rav Zvid answered, Dilma. Hi, lehecha de ramyon kalsehu. If you're asking about Nun's daughter-in-law, I'll tell you. Maybe her gold went to the same place that your daughter-in-law's gold went. Now it's explained here in the Rashi that these women didn't take care of their golden jewelry. They threw it around. They didn't take it, place it carefully in a jewelry box like is normally done by people who have golden jewelry. So, of course, if you misuse the gold, it will depreciate. But we are talking about gold in its normal use and normal care as something that, in fact, doesn't depreciate. The Gemara goes on with a second point. V'oid nihi delo iko nene ufgam la'altar. Granted, by gold, you don't have immediate depreciation. V'oilo mi lo iko pegimo. But over the course of many, many years, is there not? Of course there is depreciation, but over a very long period of time. The Mishnah is not taking that into consideration when it describes the gold as something as not having depreciation. Let us take a look at the Rashi that's relevant to this piece of Gemara. Rashi that we're looking at, you'll see, appears about approximately 10 lines from the bottom. V'oid, Rashi says, Im timsilomar, if you say demis chaserhu, that gold is something that depreciates, Afilu hachi kevon shenene moal. Nevertheless, we will still say that we don't wait for the depreciation, but rather as soon as a puta's worth of pleasure is achieved, there is meila. Dinehi dolo iko nene ufogam alter. Granted, you don't have immediate depreciation along with the pleasure. Sheno pogimiyad b'shol shenene mino. It's not something that depreciates immediately as you are wearing it and benefiting from it. But over a course of eternity, is there not pegima? There is. The mi kwamino de lesbe pegima. Did I ever say that it doesn't depreciate ever? Laute kwamino de lesbo pegima. I said immediately that in an immediate fashion it doesn't have depreciation. Avale achars man holechem is chaser, but after a long course of time it does. The kevon de laute lesbe pegima, and since gold is something that doesn't experience immediate depreciation, hilkach. Therefore, the rule that applies to gold, kevon shenehene moal, it is, yes, it is classified as something that's ein bo pegima, and as we saw in the Mishnah, those kind of things, one is considered in violation of mila with upon receiving the benefit. We turn back to the Gemara. A quote from the Mishnah on Daf Yud Ches. Hanene min hachatos, And it went on to say, Kishi chaya lo mo'al ad shiif goyim. There is no mi'ila when it's alive until there is pagam, depreciation. The Gemara asks, Michti, I bevehema tamima, if you're talking about a sacrifice that is unblemished, that's a type of, it's a situation where there is no redemption. You do not redeem, you're not allowed to redeem, sacrifices that are destined for the altar that are blemish-free. Being that it has no real value association, Hainu kois shel zohav. It has the same parameters as the golden cup, which we described as something that doesn't experience depreciation. And since a sacrifice, its whole purpose is to be sacrificed, even if, let us say, the sacrifice was weakened or worn down or something like that, that doesn't diminish its value. It doesn't have any redemption possibility. So the concept of pagam, of depreciation, is not relevant to a unblemished sacrifice. And if that's the case, why would the Mishnah say that if you're dealing with a live sin offering, that there's no mi'ilah until there is depreciation? Mi'ilah shouldn't set in, the mi'ilah should not be dependent on depreciation in the case of a live, unblemished sin offering. Let us look at the Rashi who explains this. The Rashi on the first of the widest lines at the end, Mifti, Bechatos, Behemo, Tamimo, Mairi, Masnisen, if our Mishnah is talking about an unblemished sin offering, Hainu, Kois, Shel, Zov, it would have the same characteristics, legal characteristics, that is, as a golden cup. Just like a golden cup is not something that is destined to short-term depreciation, because of its non-depreciation characteristic, mi'ilo is not dependent on that point, on depreciation, but rather upon receiving a pruto's worth of benefit, there is mi'ilo. Af chatos tamima the kaimalak rovo lav bas pidia he, an unblemished sin offering is destined to be offered and is not to be redeemed. Kevon shenana mimeno limoba, upon receiving benefit from it, let's say riding on it, that should be enough for mi'ila to be violated. Vamai koma achivkam. Why does the Mishnah say that there is no mi'ila on a live sin offering until there is depreciation? Ma pagam motzim evad bo. What pagam could you possibly impose on it? Dafilu rochev alo ad achasha. Even if you were to ride it around until it got weak, hailo havi shein pagam. That wouldn't be considered a pagam. In other words, its weakened state. The low pogmal mizbeach, it doesn't ruin it because it's tired out and worn out. It doesn't ruin it from the altar. To behemo ben shmeina ben klusha chazila chapora, as far as a sacrifice is concerned, whether it be a wholesome hardy animal or a scrawny weakened animal, it's still fit for atonement. The einbo teras pegima, therefore the concept of pegima, of depreciation, is unapplicable. Inapplicable to the unblemished sin offering. So once again, why does the Mishnah say that one who benefits from a chatos, there is no mi'ilah until he causes depreciation? The Gemara answers, Omar of Papa, that which the Mishnah said, Ad Shiifgom, is bebalas mum askina. We're dealing with a sacrifice that became blemished. Oh, now that it became blemished, it is something that is set aside to be redeemed. So it has the money value is of significance. In other words, if a person sees a wholesome, hardy animal, he'll offer more money for its redemption than he'll pay more money for its redemption than if it's a scrawny animal. So, as a result of that, since it has a value connection, a money value connection, it is now classified as something that has depreciation. Depreciation is relevant to this. Therefore, there won't be me'ila until he causes a shove pruta's worth of depreciation. We now turn to Amud Beis at the top, a Mishnah. Nehne kebechatzi pruta, upogam kechatzi pruta. Rashi at the top gives an example. Benefit of a chatzi pruta gagon shel lovash, beged shel hekdish. Venene bo kishur chatzi pruta. And the pleasure that he had from wearing this sanctified garment, he had a half pruta's worth of pleasure. Upogam bechatzi pruta. Rashi says, Shikoroi upogmoi kishir chatziputa. And he ripped it, causing damage of a half pruta, half pruta's worth of damage. The Mishnah continues, Oi shenene b'shove pruta, b'dover echad, upogam b'shove pruta b'dover achir. Someone derived pleasure, a whole pruta's worth of pleasure, from something that has pegam, but he didn't cause any depreciation in the item. So he benefited from something that is subject to depreciation, but didn't cause depreciation. He simply had benefit from it, and then caused depreciation in something else, but didn't experience any pleasure from that act. For example, Rashi's example is he spilled out some beverage that had been sanctified and didn't benefit at all from that. So these examples, the Mishnah cited, we have these two examples, in both of them lo mo'al, there is no mi'ilo violation. Ad shiene b'shove pruta, v'yifgam b'shove pruta b'dover echad, until the person benefits and causes depreciation in the very same item. This, of course, is a situation when you're dealing with an item that is subject to pegima. The Mishnah goes on with a new point, and hence we have this slash mark. On the outside margin, we have a topic heading for this, and it reads under the Nosei heading, Mosai Amina, when do we say, Diyesh Moyol Achar Moyol, that an item that experienced mi'ilo, that was the subject of a mi'ilo violation, can be the subject of a second mi'ilo violation. There's another concept of that applies to mi'ilo that's the subject really of our upcoming discussion, is this: the idea that when mi'ilo takes place, the item, the sanctified item that one benefited from, is said to leave the realm of sanctity upon your having benefited from it. If that were a hard and set rule, that something is yotzi l'chulin after mi'ila, so then we wouldn't be able to talk about mi'ila achar mi'ila, a second act of mi'ila done on something that already was the subject of a mi'ila violation. So the Mishnah, with that introduction in mind, reads, Ein moyol achar moyol b'mukdashim. There isn't a possibility of a second mi'ila violation on something that was already the subject of a mi'ila violation. Elo behemo dekotche mizbeach. This is following the Rashi Girsa. This is true only, in other words, the concept of a second mi'ila taking place on the same item after mi'ila was already violated, this applies only to an animal that was sanctified as a sacrifice for the altar. A second example, uklei shores, service vessels, bilvad. In those cases, we say that the personal use of these items doesn't cause them to leave the realm of sanctity. As Rashi says, these are examples of something that has kedushas haguf. It has inherent sanctity as opposed to value sanctity, as opposed to what we call kedushas domim. And therefore, since it has kedushas haguf, it's not something that is a candidate for redemption. And as a result of that, there is a possibility of a second Mi'ilah violation on that very same item. Ketzad, the Mishnah elaborates, Rochav al Gabi Behema, a person rode on an animal that was set aside, sanctified as a sacrifice, Ubo Chaveru Rochav, and other people came and rode on it afterwards. Kulan Mova, all of the riders will be in violation of Mi'ilah. In other words, upon the first riding, the sanctity of the animal is not affected, and therefore a second person can also be in violation of Mi'ilah if he benefits from it. Shasa b'kois shelzav, if a person used a golden service vessel and drank from it, ubo chaver v'shasa, his friend came and drank from it, ubo chaver v'shasa, as another friend came and drank from it, kulon mo'alo, they are all considered in violation of Mi'ilah. Another example, talash minachatos, someone ripped out hairs from a sin offering, someone else came and ripped out more hairs. Ubo chaveru v'tolash, kulan mo'alu. They're all considered in violation. Rebbe Oimer, kol davar she'ein loy pegam. Rebbe says anything that doesn't have, that doesn't become ruined through depreciation, that will include anything that doesn't have pidyon, that doesn't have redemption to it. Like the examples of the behemoth and the clay shoris that we saw in the Mishnah. So anything that is ein lo pagam, yesh boy moyel achar moyel. There is a moyel achar moyel possibility. As you probably guessed, it seems that Rebbe and the Tanakhama are saying the same thing. And hence this will give rise to a question in the Gemara of what's the difference between Rebbe and the Tanakhama. The Gemara, Moni Masnisen, who is the author of our Mishnah that says that there is no Moyel Achar Moyel? Or let's say this more accurately, our Mishnah that says that there is a Moyel Achar Moyel by service vessels. So who would say that? In our Mishnah we saw that there is moyel achar moyel by animals sanctified as sacrifices and by clay shores. So we're looking for someone who would say such a thing. The answer is Rebbe Nechemya. It's Rebbe Nechemya that would say that there is moyel achar moyel by clay shores as well, desanyo. Ein moyel achar moyel el bevehim obovlad. The first opinion in this Tanaic source says that the idea of moyel achar moyel applies only to animals sanctified as sacrifices. Rabbi Nechemya Oimer, behema u klei shores. He says that the concept of moyel achar moyel applies not only to behemas, but to klei shores as well. My time of the Tanakhama, what is the reason for the Tanakhama who limits this concept of moyel achar moyel to behemas? Answer, Kosovar b'inyono de behemo ksiv. The topic is in the topic of animals. In other words, the topic of Mi'ilah is in the topic of animals. Dichtiv b'el ha'osham. If we glance at the Rashi on this, Kosovar b'inyono de behemo hu dichsivo. It's an issue of, let's say, context. What is written with Mi'ilah? V'lo b'sh'ar mili. Dichtiv, its Mi'ilah appears in the context of animals and not in other areas. Dichtiv ha'kein yichaper olav be'el ha'asham. V'hai be'el ha'asham yiseirahu. This el ha'asham expression is an extra expression. Shekvar ne'mar t'chila el asham. It already said, the Pasuk already made reference to the el asham. V'neim akrav v'chiper olav ha'kohen v'sulo. The Pasuk could have said that the Kohen will offer the sacrifice for the Mi'ilah, for the Mo'el, for the Mi'ilah violator. And v'sulo, say, it could have written simply v'chiper olav ha'kohen, the Kohen atones for him. Be'el ha'asham lomali. Why does the Torah write again be'el ha'asham when it had written that earlier? Lomar, to tell us, Shekiper lov, b'ma shemoal, b'el ha'asham, shenene mimenu. that the Kohen is atoning for the person who had benefited improperly from the Eil HaAsham. Demashma filu mo'abo me'a pomim koroi Asham she'esh bo me'ila kol shah. It's implied from this that the animal is called Asham, meaning it's called a sacrifice, even after 100 times of use. From the fact that the Torah used the example of an ale as a ram, it's an animal, it's a behemoth, in the context of Mila, not other examples, it conveys this idea that there isn't repetitive Mila other than in the case of an animal, and more specifically an animal that was sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara goes on, V'Rebbe Nechemya, who added the example of Kli Shores as something subject to Moyol Achar Moyol, Omar Loch, he will tell you, Kal V'Chomer. There is Kal V'Chomer logic to apply to the service vessel. Im Achirim Mevi L'Kedush Shason, if Kli Shores is capable of bringing other things, things that are mundane, when put into a Kli Shores, they become sanctified. So that a Kli Shores is a very, we'll call very significant, very serious type thing, as we, in Hebrew we say, a very chomor type of thing, that it is able to bring other things to sanctity, and create, and as a result of that, those other items that are put into the Kli Shores become subject to Me'ilah. So the Kli Shores itself, Hu Atzmoi Loi Kol Shekein, the Kli Shores itself, like the golden cup, certainly should have sanctity enough so that it will have me'ilah achar me'ilah. It would seem to me that we can state the parallel as follows, that the Kli Shores creates sanctity on item one after the other, again and again and again. Every item that's put into a given Kli Shores, that one, that same Kli Shores, will impose upon it sanctity. And sanctity comes along with sanctity the potential of a me'ilah violation. So if it brings many other items, one after the other, to sanctity and its potential me'ilah, the Kli Shores itself will certainly be subject to multiple me'ilah possibilities. Continuing in the Gemara, Rebbe Omer, Kol Dover She'en Bo Pidyon, or we had seen a Girsa Ein Bo Pagam, Yesh Boi Moyol Achar Moyol. Anything that doesn't have Pagam, and which we also explained, it doesn't have depreciation in the sense that it's not something that is to be redeemed at all. So it doesn't have any money value association. As a result of that, there is Moyol Achar Moyol. Well, Hainu Tanakama. Isn't that the same thing that the Tanakama had said? The Tanakama himself had said that very point, that there isn't Moyol Achar Moyol, unless you're dealing with Kotshe Mizbeach and Kli Shores. Those are items that have Kedusha Saguf, inherent Kedusha, things that are not subject to redemption, and only in those things do you have Moyol Achar Moyol. Rebbe is saying essentially the same thing. So, why is he in the Mishnah? That's the Gemara's question here of Hainu Tanakama. Omar Rava. Rava answers, but before we go on with the Gemara, we have some markings to explain. You notice in the outside margin under our Nosei Mivne heading, a diamond is featured. The diamonds are deos, opinions, b'mai ikah bein Tanakama v'Rebbe. What is the point of difference between Rebbe and the Tanakama? D'lecha'ira shnehem maskimim. It would appear that both agree b'inyan moyol achar moyol, that as far as when moyol achar moyol applies, they seem to agree. The double underline highlights the expression Iko Binayo, at the point at which the Gemara says what the point of difference would be. So now the Gemara. Omar Rava. Rava answers, what's the point of difference? Iko Binayu Eitzim. The issue of wood. Wood serves as fuel and offered, sanctified as an offering to the Beis Hamikdash. People will dedicate wood to the Beis Hamikdash. The Tanur Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic source that elaborates on this point. Ha'omer hareolai etzim. If a person accepts upon himself a wood donation to the Beis Hamikdash, lo yivchos mishnei gzirim, he shall not give less than two boards. Rebbe Omer, Eitzim, Korban Hain. Eitzim are classified as a sacrifice. In fact, they're classified as a mincha type offering. Utunin Melach, Utunin Tnufa. And as a result of their being classified as an offering, they require salt. If one dedicates wood, he has to bring along with it salt, which is something that accompanies all other sacrifices. And tenufa is a waving ceremony. There's another girsa in Maseches Menachos that's quoted here that it requires hagosha, the drawing near where it's brought to the corner of the altar. We should glance at the Rashi to appreciate how is there a manifestation? What is the manifestation of the difference when we speak about wood being the point of difference? So we look in the Rashi, Dibur HaMaschil, Rebbe Omer, Eitzim Korban Hain, Utunin Melach, Tunin Hagosha. You'll notice there's a diamond in the Rashi that's in the wider lines under the Gemara text. Le Rebbe Dekori Lehu Korban Have Dovor She'ein Bo Pegam V'Kotshe Kedushas Haguf. Rebbe, who calls, uses a formal name for a wood offering, calling it a Korban. Therefore it has inherent Kedusha. And as such, as we saw earlier, V'yesh Bohen Moyol Achar Moyol. As we mentioned, things that have Kedushas Haguf have that possibility of repetitive Mi'ila. Sheim Yoshav Alehen, if someone sat on it, V'chozar Acher V'yoshav Alehen, they sat on it and derived benefit by having that as their seat, Yesh Bohen Moyol Acher Moyol. Ule Rabbonon, Delo Koru Lehu Korban, the Rabbonon who do not refer to Eitzim as Korban, Lo Havu Kikotche Mizbeach, they're not considered Kotche Mizbeach, Elo Havu Kikotche Berek Abayis. They're rather considered something donated to the temple fund, the temple repair fund. And as a result, they don't have inherent Kedusha, but rather value Kedusha. V'havu dober shiesh bo begam. And therefore, they're something that is considered subject to depreciation. V'domu keman delo kaimia v'lodomi. And they're like something that is has a money value associated with it. V'ein bohen moyel achar moyel. And as a result of that, There isn't a possibility of repetitive mi'ilah. Going on in the Gemara, we have another marking, a volcano shape. This is featured in the outside margin under a tatnose mivneh. Tatnose means a subtopic. And the structural note says, regarding this trapezoid volcano shape, deos b'shitas Rebbe. These are opinions of Amoroim within Rebbe. Ma heim hatotzaos mikach sherebi magdir eitzim korban. What other points, or what other outgrowth is there from that, from the fact that Rebbe classifies wood as a korban? So in the Gemara, Omar Rava ledivrei Rebbe, according to Rebbe, who says that eitzim are a korban. Eitzim te'unim eitzim. Just like if you were to bring an animal sacrifice, you need to bring fuel along with it. You need to provide wood. So a wood offering needs accompanying wood. V'yomar Papa ledivrei Rebbe, eitzim tzrichim kemitza. According to Rebbe, that eitzim are classified as a korban, and we mentioned earlier they're under the general heading of a mincha. Mincha is a meal offering. In the case of a meal offering, a person is expected to take a handful of the meal offering and place it in the fire as the hakrov, that which is offered from a meal offering. Therefore, if one brings an offering of wood, and it's classified as a mincha, a handful of the wood that he offers must be separated and offered as well. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Papa, you can see, appears here in a diamond. He too is coming to offer his opinion as what the point of difference between Rebbe and the Chachamim will be. So Rav Papa Omar, Kotshe Mizbeach Temimin, V'nasu Bali Mumin, V'ovar V'shochtan, Iko Binayu. The case of an animal dedicated as a sacrifice in an unblemished state, subsequently became blemished, and went ahead and slaughtered that animal. He slaughtered it, though, before redeeming it, which is, he did something improper here. This will be the point of difference. V'hotanya, we have a Tanaic source that is a support for this analysis. The source says, Kotshe Mizbeach Temimin, V'nasu Balei Mumin, V'ovar V'shochton. Rebbe Omer, Yikavru. Rebbe says they are to be buried. Why is it that they are buried? They're buried and not redeemed. That's the point. As opposed to V'chachomim Omrim Yifdu. Chachomim say they are subject to redemption. Now this brings to mind the issue of something having money value. According to Rebbe, Kotshe Mizbeach that became died, they were slaughtered and they're dead, they are something, or we should say that the rules of redemption state that something needs to stand up to be redeemed, stand up and be evaluated and then be redeemed. If it can't do that, if it can't stand up because it's dead, so then it's to be buried. And since it can't be redeemed simply because it's dead, because it can't fulfill the requirement for redemption, namely ha'amodo v'arocha, it is therefore something that has moyel achar moyel associated with it. Once again, since it's something that cannot be redeemed because of the rule of ha'amod v'arocha that cannot be fulfilled, so it's something that doesn't have any value association. And as a result of that, there is moyel achar moyel. However, according to the Chachamim that says that Kotshe Mizbeach were not included in the Hamodo V'arocha requirement, in other words, there was never an expectation for it to stand up to be evaluated in anticipation of its redemption. So since it didn't have to stand up to be evaluated, it is capable of being redeemed. And after all, he slaughtered it. So the issue will be, if it's redeemed, he'll be able to eat it. As a result of that, since it is subject to redemption, it has something called Kedushas Domim. It has a value, sanctity, and that, as we said, it has a pidyon possibility, and as a result of that, there is no moyel achar moyel possibility. We explained earlier that moyel achar moyel is a possibility when there is no value association with it. However, if there's a value association with it, once it has been subjected to Me'ila, it leaves the realm of Kedusha, and there is no subsequent Me'ila possibility. So that, according to Rav Papa, this case of Kotshe Mizbeach, that became blemished and were then slaughtered, will be a point of difference regarding the Mi'ilo Moyel Achar Moyel possibility. According to Rebbe, there will be a Moyel Achar Moyel possibility, and according to the Chachamim, there will not be a Moyel Achar Moyel possibility. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.